hands if we are committed to do his will and not ours. But let me warn us by saying that moving forward and doing God's will bring about opposition. In other words, you can expect some hindrance to show up, because everyone doesn't have the Lord's agenda as a top priority. Why is this? Because many are too busy trying to promote their own personal agendas. And so note, if you will, that the first attempt to hinder the work came from in the form of ridicule and criticism. But we know in verse 1 through 3, it shows that Sanballat and his friends, they started out by insulting the people about their ability to rebuild the wall. They said in verse 3, in so many words, he said, that wall y'all trying to build is so weak that even a little fox could knock it down. We said thus this morning that folk become critical and suspicious of change, even change that leads to progress and spiritual growth. But I believe that the main reason for this is that some folk resist change because they see it as a personal threat to them. And so often they become angry and try to block progress or pending success. But now, what most critics fail to understand, like Sanballat and his friends, is that the wall didn't belong to Nehemiah, nor did it belong to the workers who were trying to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, but they belong to God. And in the same way, the church don't belong to the pastor, nor does it belong to the members who are helping to build the church, but the church belong to God. Because just like in the text, it was God working through Nehemiah and his team to rebuild the walls and restore the gates to their former positions. And in our case, it is God who is working through the pastor and other committed members of the church to move the Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church forward spiritually as well as physically. And so like Nehemiah and his workers, in order to conquer criticism and hindrance, we got to call on the Lord in prayer. But now, this doesn't mean that we stop working and just pray, but we are to work on while we pray. And so the text reveals in verse 6 that despite the ridicule and criticism, the people had a mind to work. Bottom line, if we are to be successful in the Lord's work in spite of the hindrance, we must have a mind to work, and we must keep our focus and attention clearly on the work at hand and not on the critics. And so as we consider the immediate text, we note, yes, Lord, that in verse 7 and 8 declared, but when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabians, and the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps or the holes in the walls were being closed, they became angry. And all of them conspired together to come together and attack Jerusalem and hinder it or cause confusion. My brothers and sisters, I need to tell us, anyone in the church who stands in the way of progress, be it auxiliary church member or members, are hinderers. I remember during my childhood being with my grandmother. Most of the time she had always said, boy, if you can't be a help, don't be a hindrance. But you know what? I didn't realize the importance of that advice until I experienced intense hindrance in my own ministry. Because my brothers and sisters, it's frustrating to say the least that when you're trying to do God's will so that the church can move forward and succeed, and somebody will come along and try to stand in the way and hinder you, it makes you sometimes almost become discouraged. And so the text reveals in verse 7 and 8 that since the criticism and the ridicule didn't work, these hindrances came together with another strategy. We note verse 8 says that all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion or hinder the work. My brothers and sisters, you need to beware, because if you are one of the faithful and obedient servants of the Lord who support the work of the kingdom and the work of the church, don't be surprised if you discover that some of the same folk who sit beside you in church will get angry with you because of your commitment to Christ and to his work. Because hinderers dislike change, and you're part of that process. In other words, they prefer things to remain the same so that they can stand out themselves. But my brothers and sisters, anybody can be a big fish in a little bitty pond.
It is our hope that you were blessed by Pastor's message. Join us at our regular service weekly at 808 Anacoco Street, Leesville, Louisiana, or phone us at 337-238-4954. May God bless and keep you until we meet again.
It's gonna be all right.
This is KAYT, Gina Alexandria.
No need to worry.
The gospel is on the radio at 88.1.
You put your hand.
Call up somebody. Tell them it's gonna be all right. KAYT. Got the gospel. Transmitting all day.
Jesus.
Welcome to the Movement of Christ Worldwide Ministers Broadcast, brought to you by the Greater King David Baptist Church, pastored by Dr. John E. Montgomery II. One church ministering in two locations, 222 Blood Road and 7305 Harry Drive, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Thank you for your prayers and support of the ministry. Let us now join the broadcast already in progress.
Hope for all.
Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Just a little while, I want to speak from the subject. If you leave the Lord outside, there's something wrong on the inside. Turn to your neighbor if you don't mind and say, neighbor,
neighbor,
if you leave the Lord outside,
there's something wrong
on the inside. And if you truly believe that, give God some praise in his house. Jesus has written a letter to the pastor of the church of the Laodiceans, a very prosperous people, a very independent people, a very stagnated people, a people who has been blessed, counted themselves rich, increased in goods, and in need of nothing, a people who celebrates their independence from everything and everybody. And in the midst of this, the Lord Jesus reveals that there are some things wrong with them. They have overvalued and overrated the reality of who and what they are. As you walk through this third chapter, verses 14 through 20, you'll see how the Lord deals with them and how he reveals to them and brings them back to reality concerning their own diagnosis of their own situation, and makes it quite clear that he sees some things in them that they do not see in themselves. And after he gets through telling them those things, and we've dealt with them at the first and second service, and now we get to the point and place where Jesus now stands at the door and knocks. Now, that might not be offensive from the offset, but what you've got to realize, he's knocking at the doors of his own church. It's something wrong when you go to your house and have to knock on your own door. It's something wrong when you own the house and you're locked out of your own house. But because, listen at this, Jesus desires to have fellowship, a mutual fellowship, does not want to force himself upon his people, want to be desired by his people to have that intimate fellowship with them, he gives them an opportunity to extend to him an open door invitation. Notice what you see in this verse. It says, behold. Of course, this word means to pay close attention, same primitive etymological root word that we get binoculars from. It means to focus in closely. He says, I stand. I didn't send somebody. I didn't tell anybody. I stand. So the first thing I want you to see about this is Jesus came himself. Jesus came. He came. What I love about the Lord, he has decided and designed that he would come from heaven down to planet earth. As a matter of fact, when he was talking about the realities of man's soul, one of the disciples said, Lord, do you want us to, why don't you just rain down fire and burn up the Samaritans who wouldn't let them go through trying to get to Jerusalem? He said, wait a minute. I came to seek and to save that which were lost. I came. I didn't send anyone because there was no one who could pay the price, no one who could make the sacrifice, no one who could redeem man back to the Heavenly Father but me. So I came. But when he came, listen at this, he took a proactive part in trying to reach man's attention. And so the first way he does it is by knocking on the door. What was the purpose of knocking on the door? To get his attention. And may I say to somebody here, anybody who's on the outside of your door that wants you to know they're on the outside of your door, they've got one of two options: ring the doorbell or knock on the door. And in his day, it was the knocking on the door. The purpose of that was to suggest to those inside that there is someone on the outside desiring entrance into the house. So he came and he did his part. But he didn't just come. He did something else. He called out to those inside of the house. Look at the message. He says, if any man hear my voice. Well, they couldn't hear his voice unless he called. In other words, you know when you've been knocking on the door and you say, hey, it's me. And somebody might holler, who is me? And then you identify yourself. But now Jesus makes clear that he wants them to understand something. He says, if any man hear my voice. He makes clear that he is open to fellowship and salvation to every soul. He's not prejudiced. He is not picky nor choosy about who he will save. He has come to save and desires that no man perish. If any man hear my voice. Now, when he hears the voice, there's something he must do. And open the door. Not just hear his voice and turn a deaf ear. Not just hear his voice and peek out the window and see it's him and close the window and not answer the door. Not hear his voice and act as if Jesus really isn't there. But hear his voice and do something about it. Every Sunday morning in this church, Jesus knocks on the doors of man's heart. And whoever you are, my brother, my sister, God is trying to say to you, I have a word for you. I have a work for you. And he wants us to know that the only way he can do in us what he desires to do in us is if we participate. If we hear, first of all, that it is the Lord desiring entrance in our lives, and it is the Lord who desires us to hear him and to heed him, we will then open up the doors of our heart. Listen, the devil does not want you to let Jesus in your heart. I want to expose the enemy today. The devil does not want the Lord to come in, because if the Lord comes into your heart will never be the same. The devil doesn't want the Lord in your heart, because if the Lord comes into your heart, he's going to bring light. He's going to bring joy. He's going to bring healing. He's going to bring deliverance. He's going to bring everything that your heart has need of if you let him in. If you let him in, things cannot remain the same. And so there are reasons why we hear and don't heed. We hear him knocking, but we're engaged in an activity that would not be appropriate for Jesus to see. And so he has caught us with our guards down. Didn't know he was coming at this hour. I got too much stuff to put up and put away and fix up. So I'll let him think I'm not at home. That's another reason, may I suggest, we don't open the door. Because somebody who's in there ought not be in there. And you don't want him to see who's there. I am talking about Satan, quiet as his kid. Thirdly, it may be because your house is dirty. And you know, my brothers and sisters, I don't care who you are, you really don't like unannounced company to just show up at your door. Especially if your house is dirty. I don't know, sometimes we get busy with the hustle and bustle of life, and you know, it's a matter of taking off, putting on, running out the door, and you're going to catch it later. But the next day comes and you take off and put on and you run out the door, and the next day comes and you take off and put on and you run out the door, and before you know it, there's stuff everywhere. Now you'll say it's not dirty, it's just a little unkempt, a little junky. Stuff is just not in its place. I don't care what you call it, you don't want to let nobody see it. Now listen at this. Whatever the reason is that we do not let him in, suggests that there's something wrong on the inside. Something wrong on the inside. Maybe someone else before Jesus has come and they've caught you at your worst, have criticized, persecuted you, said all manner of evil about you, and though it really wasn't you, they caught you at a bad time. And you kind of promised yourself and some other responsible people you wouldn't let anybody else see your house like that. Maybe it was because you felt like Jesus was coming to judge rather than redeem. And so Satan tells you, don't let him in, don't let him in. You know you're not right. You know you're not where you ought to be. You know you're not doing what you ought to do. Don't let him in. Why don't you wait till you get yourself together first? Clean up the mess in your life. And so you try to fix things up and you try to gather things and you try to put things in your place only to be hoodwinked by the enemy. Because can I tell you, the only way you could get your life straight, get your house in order, is if you open the door and let Jesus in. You'll never get off those drugs with Jesus on the outside. You'll never let that bottle alone while Jesus is on the outside. You'll never turn from your promiscuous ways as long as Jesus is on the outside. You'll never stop running around cheating, lying, conniving, on and on and on as long as Jesus is on the outside. You've got to say, I've been in this situation too long. I've been down too long. I've been wrong too long. And the only one that can fix that is the man on the outside knocking to come on the inside. So many of us, we wonder why things can't change. They can't change unless we bring in the one who can change them. And he says, behold, I stand. Now, I don't want to rush past that I stand, because what Jesus is literally saying is, if you don't answer now, I'll keep on knocking. And sooner or later, can I tell you, if he don't go away, you're going to get tired of him knocking on your door and calling out to you to open up and let him in. And his desire is that as long as life remains, he's going to give you an opportunity. But here's what you don't realize. You don't know when life will end. Behold, I stand. I've taken a stand. I am resolved that I want to save you. And I've showed up at your house, and I'm calling out to you to say, whomever shall open this door, who will ever give to me their ear and hear me, I will come in and sup with them individually. So let me throw this out parenthetically, that when he comes in, when he calls to you, it is because he wants to commune with you. With you. See, what you don't understand is, whoever opens the door for him, he's coming in specifically for them. Hear me well. So what it literally means is, he could save the whole house, but if only one person in the house invites him in, he will come in and fellowship with that one individual, in spite of whoever else don't want him to fellowship with them in the house. What a wonderful God. Do you know what we need to learn from Jesus? Not to be afraid of rejection. See, a whole lot of us miss out on life and the best that life has to offer because we're too afraid that we're going to be rejected. And so because we're afraid of rejection, we won't ask the question. We won't knock on the door. We won't call out. We won't share our heart because we're afraid of being rejected. Do you realize how many times in one day we reject Jesus? Now, I'm not talking to sinners right now. I'm talking to church folk. Just in case you missed this, this letter is to the church. Somebody will catch that on your way home. He's not talking to men and women outside of salvation and outside of relationship with him. He's talking about folk who have thought that they could make it without him, who had a taste of him and somehow thought that they had excelled above him and didn't realize they still needed him, and he wanted to get them back right on track. So he's talking to the church. You know, sometimes we do things the way we do things for so long, the way we do things, that we think those things that we do are right, even if it contradicts the word. Well, we've been doing it this way for so long. And the pastor before me did it this way for so long. And the deacons before us, and the deaconess, and the choir, and the this, and the members, and that, and all of that. But what you may not know is that they did that to the best of their ability with the limited light they may have had in understanding. Every time the Lord gives us greater illumination, it is so that we can gain a greater understanding and move forward into the greater things that he has for us. So when you know more than your grandmother and grandfather, and more than your mama and your daddy, it is because God expects more from you than he did from the previous generations. Listen at this. He says something. He says, and open the door, I will come in to him. I will. Now, if you open the door, listen at this, of your heart, you don't ever have to worry about Jesus looking at your house and saying, no, thank you. If you open up the doors of your heart and it is black and filthy, and I mean as dirty can be, Jesus will still come in. And with his red blood, he will wash it whiter than snow. I will come in. So that means no matter how far you have fallen, how low you may be, whatever may be the conditions or situations of your life, Jesus says, if you will open the door for me, I will come in. Not criticizing, but communing. Now listen to this. One of the things you've got to know is Jesus does not communicate in filth. So before he communicates with you, he communes with you, he's got to clean you up first. And so when he comes in, he does what you cannot do. He does what you're not willing to do. And he gets you right straight. And that's the only way he can commune with you. And so your communion with him begins with communication with him. And then it's a cleanup act. And then it's a communion. You see, when the Lord changes things in your life and rearranges things in your life and brightens up your life, then there is a desire to want to be with him in a more intimate setting. You learn no more to hide things from him. But you say, Lord, this is my situation. And you open up your heart and you tell him the truth and you make it clear because you know that he is able to change and rearrange your every situation. You become confident in him that he loves you for you, not what you have, not what you've done, not what you do, not where you are, but you. Listen, I will come into him. And notice what he says again. He says, and will. Notice these positive and assurances that he gives. And will sup with him. Notice he doesn't say them, because he makes this personal. And sup with him. Whoever invites him into their lives, no matter where your life might be, no matter what you're going through, if you invite him in, he will come in. And once he cleans up, he's going to prepare supper. It's in the text. And sup with him. And sup with you. Listen at this. I mean, sometimes it's just hard to eat in a dirty place. I don't care how good a cook is if their surroundings are dirty. All of a sudden, I might have wanted a glass of water, but I'm good. Do you have some bottled water? No. It's difficult to eat in a place that's not tidy. That's not sanitary. And so the Lord cleans your heart up and you get your appetite back and he sups with you. And see, in the Eastern culture, many great relationships were strengthened and bonds were strengthened and fellowships were enhanced at dinner time. Families ate together, communicated together, shared the activities of the day, shared dreams, plans, visions. They talked with one another. They were intimate at the dinner table. That was a lightness of spirit when they supped together. And my brothers and sisters, what a great tragedy America has lost when families can't come together at least one meal a day and sit down and sup together. Listen at this. The last portion of this says, and he with me. It's mutual. It's mutual. You need the Lord, but the Lord desires you just as much as you need him. He came to seek and to save that which were lost, to bring man back into a right relationship with his Father. He loved his Father so much, the work of his Father so much, the will of his Father so much, that he